Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and happy Christmas to you on Christmas Eve. In this episode, we're going to look back at some of the best of the guests from 2025, starting in January, when Fourth One celebrated their 50th birthday. I spoke with Gary Spence from the weekday afternoon show and Boogie from the Fourth One breakfast show about the importance of community in local radio and having a good team around you.
It is.
He's like, yeah, Georgie, it's the team, but it's mainly me.
It's all about me, Georgie.
It's your interaction with Arlene.
What you're saying is absolutely right. We, in many ways, are propping Boogie up after all these years, you know.
Sometimes it feels like it. But the Scottish humour is very self-deprecating and we like to have a laugh. We like to put each other down, but I'm allowed to put Arlene down and she's allowed to put me down, but someone from over there isn't allowed to come and have a pop at us. Do you know what I mean?
Again, by over there, he means Glasgow. Yeah, there's a real chip on their shoulder in this city. But do you know what? As Boogie says, huge similarities. I think I touched on this at the Arias. I was giving the speech when Clyde won Station of the Year and I was saying that stuff happens here in this studio right now in Edinburgh as happens at Clyde. And I don't think it happens. In fact, I know it doesn't happen outside London anywhere these days, bar maybe a couple of examples. Boogie and Arlene will talk about something and you're in the studio and the switchboard just lights up. Like those old videos we all watch of American radio DJs back in the day with their boards. Switchboards are jammed the minute they start talking. Same with Bowie in Glasgow. I call them Bowie calls. I call them Boogie calls. When you're talking about something and you're not necessarily looking for calls, you've certainly not asked for them. You'll always welcome them. You talk about something and the switchboard starts going. And that is such a huge thing in 2024. It would have been 15 years ago, but yeah, these days especially, it's so rare. And I think it is ultimately because they've been here for so long. Most people who live in the city, most people who live in Glasgow as well, they can't remember a time when these guys weren't on their breakfast show. And that's something that it's never going to happen again. It's hugely powerful.
And it is tapping into that sense of humour, but that sense of community that you get from local radio.
We do a lot of things, obviously, for Cash for Kids, our charity. Like last year, this is a good example. Last year, I decided just in a moment of madness on there that I was going to run the marathon, the Edinburgh Marathon. We said, well, how can we get people involved with this rather than just listening to the guy off the radio run the marathon? Let's get a team together. So we said, I wonder if we get 100. We thought, well, that's stupid. We might get 5. But, you know, 278 people applied to be part of it. These are people who have never run a marathon before. And that speaks volumes for the power of Radio 4th is that, you know, we've got that many people who are prepared to put themselves through that huge challenge because they want to be part of the radio station and the story. People from Edinburgh have a bit of a reputation for being quite cold and quite tight, but once you've cracked it, once you're in with them, they're the nicest bunch.
And that helped you win that ARIA, didn't it, Boogie? The best breakfast show.
Yeah, that was nice. That was unexpected. We never expected to win that. You know, we were up against the big guns, Radio 1, Radio 2. It was, again, all to do with the people that called in, the funny lines that they say, the stupid things that happen on the show.
What's it like to record a podcast in an unusual and remote location? Well, Vicky Wright, producer with Manchester Podcast Makers Crowd Network, told me about travelling to the Arctic to record podcast episodes for the series Oceans, Life Underwater, which they made in collaboration with Greenpeace. I asked her what the challenges and problems are when you're recording somewhere like that.
So I think that initially what I thought were going to be the problems was like, you know, how do you keep a microphone safe in a snowstorm? That was kind of what I went into it expecting. But actually, it ended up being so much different. Like a lot of the problems that there ended up being, there was nothing like technical at all. It was literally like, we're living on a boat. You have to really live by the hierarchy that's on the boat, obviously for everyone's safety. Also as like a respect thing as well. Like it's just important that everyone follows, you know, everything is captain's orders and then everything really peters down. And we were absolute bottom of the list. Obviously we didn't have authority at all, as we shouldn't. Don't put me and Hannah on a boat and give us authority. That's not wise. We're not seafarers. Kind of that ended up, I think, being a bit more of the challenge, which was that we were following one of Greenpeace's like massive campaigns on that ship. And you kind of didn't want to get in people's way. Like we were there to obviously record it and document it. But I think the nature of a podcast is very much like you sit down and you talk for a lot longer. I actually think it would have been easier if we were filming it, because then you can just film people doing what they're doing. But actually, no, we need to sit down and have people's real like undivided attention for like 40 minutes. And just getting that time from people was quite difficult. And also kind of making sure that they trusted us. Like whilst we know that we're working on this production alongside Greenpeace, when you think about how big of an organization Greenpeace is, then you're getting different people from all over the world who are Greenpeace campaigners coming onto this boat. They don't know us. They don't, and they, you know, we're expecting them to trust us with their stories about, you know, something that really means the absolute world to them. And we're having to make that relationship in 20 minutes with them in order for them to like tell us everything. So I think that ended up kind of being something that was a bit more challenging. And then also just, you know, trying to avoid seasickness. That was quite a lot as well. Because we were told that we might get seasick. Thankfully, we didn't. But I think the fear actually made us quite ill. It was the fear of us like, we were like, oh my God, we're going to be so ill. We weren't. We were absolutely fine. But, you know, that does feel like one of the things that we thought was going to be a massive issue.
Back in June, I chatted with Scout Zofia Bolton, who won two golds at this year's ARIAS for Best New Presenter for her Prison Radio Association Rock Show and Best Creative or Technical Innovation Award for The Ballad of Scout and the Alcohol Tag. This show was made with the Prison Radio Association and BBC Radio 4. I told Scout I found it an incredible but tough listen because she was so raw and honest in it. And I asked her what it was like telling her story in that way.
It wasn't difficult. It was an enormous relief to just get it out there. You know what? It was sort of like a mea culpa, just like, right, okay, yeah, I did this and it was awful, but let me just tell you why. It was almost like an exorcism. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of that stuff out. And when it came to working with Andrew and Ellen, those are the people I work closely with the sound design. I remember saying to Andrew, he was saying, oh, we've done the hearing the voices. It's kind of intense. I was like, good. I want the listener to feel really screwed up after listening to this, because I had to feel like that. I want them to feel even a portion of what I felt, and then they'll understand. And that's not me being sadistic to the listener. That's me sort of desperately saying, please understand what I went through. And if you feel a little bit messed up after listening to this, please appreciate what it's like to live through it.
And that's what that sound design did. It was so immersive that you did that. I mean, when they were doing the voices that you were hearing, but hearing that back when you listened to the finished product, did it trigger or open up anything?
It was a difficult listen. I think I've always been sort of out of touch with my feelings. I get a delayed reaction with my feelings. So a lot of people, when it went out, were calling me in tears, like people that are close to me saying, oh my God, like I was there, I lived through it with you, but to hear it all in 28 minutes, to hear that whole 3 years in 28 minutes is really intense. And I remember sitting there on the phone thinking, yeah, I guess it is kind of intense. And it took me a while. And then I think it was like 3 months after it went out, I listened to it on my own with headphones and I did cry. I cried my eyes out. I needed to. It had to happen and it felt good. You know, a good sort of healing.
Cathartic. Yeah.
Very cathartic. It needed to, because I barely cried in prison, barely cried since getting out. And that is because sometimes things have been so bad in the past, it's just been easier to go, do you know what? I've decided I'm not going to feel this anymore. I'm checking out, you know. So checking back in again, it's been a slow process. But yeah, when I heard it back, that was important.
In March, my guest was Fee Mack from Radio 1 Extra. Fee is passionate about encouraging women into the broadcasting industry. And I asked her what she thought some of the barriers that women, and especially women of colour, face working in radio and audio.
That's a good question. I would definitely say one of the main barriers is not being taken seriously. We all have a voice and we all have a story to tell. And I feel like for a long time, it's changing now, but for a long time, it just felt like women's stories weren't important or what they had to say isn't of importance. And that is definitely not the truth. You know, we have different backgrounds, we have different family histories, just different experiences in life that we can bring forth. And no woman is the same. And every person deserves to have their voice and their story heard, which is why I'm so passionate. Because for someone like me from a council estate in one of the most deprived boroughs in London, like I'm technically not meant to be on stations like Radio 1 or 1 Extra, but me having the opportunity to be in those spaces, it makes sense for me to hold the door for the next girl who looks like me from a council estate, who has a passion and desire for music and broadcasting, to have that opportunity as well. It shouldn't just be for one person, it should be for everyone.
It's interesting you said someone like me shouldn't be on. What makes you say that? Is that because historically people like you haven't been? It's not that you shouldn't though, Fee.
You're right. You're actually right. Maybe it's just the way, yeah, historically and what I saw growing up, the voices I heard growing up primarily on radio. It was only like the stations that had like primarily black music,
yeah,
that had presenters that looked like me. Mm. Those specialist stations, whereas, you know, other stations, there wasn't anyone that looked like me. And it's only now that we're seeing those kind of people, which is needed and it's necessary. But you're right, we should be, just that sometimes the opportunities don't reach that far out for us.
We're talking about the barriers that women face. How much more are those barriers compounded when you're a woman of colour?
It's tough. It is really, really tough because as a woman of colour, you might speak in a different way that people aren't generally used to hearing. Obviously, you look a different way. And those are barriers that should not be barriers, but it does make it really, really hard. Like, for example, a black girl might want to see herself on a particular station, but when she looks at the people at the station, they don't look like her. And it's like, well, maybe she doesn't belong there. But it's like, no, you do. Because they'll try to push you towards like stations where there's more people that look like you, or they play music that you should like or that you should be listening to. But it's like, no, just because I'm black does not mean I can't be here or do this or do that. So it's just that putting us in a box where necessarily we shouldn't be put in a box. Like, we have our own styles. We have our own experiences, our own journeys, our own interests, and they're not singular.
Thinking about these barriers, Fee, how do we, as women in the broadcasting industry, how do we help break them down?
We must first support one another. I think it's so important. I always get like messages and DMs of young aspiring radio broadcasters, and they're really nice and very lovely. But I always remind them, like, guys, you can definitely do it. Like, there is a space for you to take up. Don't feel like you have to hold yourself back. Don't feel like you can't support the person next to you, because you can all rise together. But I definitely feel like, yeah, lending a hand, giving advice, it could change someone's life and just like give them that light bulb moment, like, right, okay, there is a space for me. I can do this. It's possible.
Award-winning comedy producer Ed Moorish from Lead Mojo was my guest in February. Ed has produced a series called POV on BBC Radio 4, which is a sketch show that features comedy that began life online or on social media, and he mixes it with immersive sound design. I asked Ed, with the changes in linear radio, the rise of podcasts and visualised podcasts, where he saw the future of radio comedy.
I am not a fan of chatcasts. That's just my personal preference. And one of the joys of a career in creative industries is getting to make stuff that you like. But I think it'd be foolish to acknowledge that they're not popular. My query is, or my concern is, that scripted radio comedy has been a training ground for generations of comedians in this country. It's, you know, that sort of bridging point between live work and, you know, this online work and TV, because it's the first time you're told, no, it doesn't quite work that way, and, you know, here's a deadline and here's some money in order for you to meet that deadline. And if that goes away, then I don't know what it gets replaced with. And given how hard it is to launch a podcast without somebody that's already famous, I worry where the next generation of famous comedians are going to come from. Because if they're not being put in front of audiences, and audiences aren't finding out they like them, and someone who just looks at download numbers and goes, we do better when we have someone who's been on telly, and you don't book less famous comics as guests, we're pulling up the ladder behind ourselves. I've got a sitcom coming this year with a writer who doesn't have an agent and has never had a thing before. He's got, you know, bits of additional material. So these things are still getting bought. And I think there's room for, I mean, one of the joys of audio is there's room for every kind of show. One of my concerns about where we're going with chatcast and visualization is we're all chasing the same algorithm. There is a way to make it look that the algorithm likes. There are things to avoid. So there's all these things that we're doing to optimize the algorithm's favorability towards our videos. But the more we do that, that's more what the audience expects. And anything different gets rejected because it's not what they expected.
Radio 1 Extra Breakfast producer Adele Cross was made a Fellow of the Academy last September. Adele is also a former Radio Academy trustee and chair of judges for our RAMP scheme for 2025 and 2026. She's passionate about helping young people get into the radio and audio industry and is founder of the Crosspoint Consultancy, which gives career and development opportunities to 18 to 30-year-olds. When she was my guest, she told me about how she moved from news to music radio.
So my experience was in news, Radio 4, Current Affairs, Moneybox. Then I went over to Newsbeat. And then I thought, I like this music thing. And I basically finangled my way into Raz Kwami's show and then basically stuck. I did a chart show with Vern and Reggie. I mean, it's just wild. And then I got a call from my editor saying, Adele. So Trevor Nelson, he's asked if you wouldn't mind producing a show from 10 to 1 with the Live Lounge. Is that all right? Can you imagine? No. Wait, pause. Can you actually imagine someone telling you that the Trevor Nelson has looked across the scene and said, no, I want her. And then you step up. Wild. I don't know what to tell you. It's absolutely wild. My first ever interview with a famous person was Dave Grohl. And I remember thinking, first of all, he's going to know I'm not into rock because I look like a little kid that likes hip hop. So I dressed, I found a t-shirt. Please don't judge me. I found a t-shirt that had Guns N' Roses on it. I know it's great. I know, but I tried to fit in. The night before, I was so nervous that I couldn't keep food down. I couldn't keep food in. Oh, went to the O2, went backstage. He was a little late, but that's okay because it's Dave Grohl. And then when the interview started, I opened the door. I said, hello, Mr. Grohl. I'm Adele from Radio 1. And he went, oh, hello. Welcome. Come in a real fun voice. And then I went, okay, I will. And then the whole thing just was calm and lovely. And I thought, oh yeah, you know, celebs are just like us, you know. So that was my first ever, why am I doing this moment. Like I say, I was meant to be here for a week. I'm kind of hoping no one finds out that I'm a fake.
In May, my guest was Yinka Burkini, who is the host of Out of Frame, produced by Listen for Crew HQ at Warner Brothers Studio. It's a podcast all about the different roles in the film and TV industry. I asked Yinka to tell me more about how she got started in broadcasting.
Well, I started on a community station called Rinse FM. I applied to work there after hearing, I think it was Superdrug FM when I was shopping for shampoo one time.
Yeah.
And then I heard the lady say, that was Ollie Murs and it's 2 for 1 on Tresemme. And I was like, I can do that. And I had just graduated from uni. I didn't want to pursue the subject and I was kind of like a bit lost. I knew a friend who knew a friend who knew a friend who worked at Rinse FM, who was running Rinse FM actually, and just applied. And I harassed them for ages until they gave me a job. Like I literally would go and sit on the floor until they gave me a chance to work on the radio. And then sort of from then I worked my way up to getting onto Capital Extra. And then from Capital Extra, that's where I met my manager and that's where my TV career started. I would say 3 to 4 years of, you know, working. I think I worked 2 jobs and did the show at Rinse FM. And it was really difficult because I didn't know anybody who did what I wanted to do, broadcasting, presenting, and now obviously journalist by trade. It's the one job I haven't been fired from.
What about someone who's starting in their career journey in audio? What's the one piece of career advice you would give them?
I would give somebody the advice that I wish I got myself. It would be, you know, if you want to be funny, like tell jokes. If you want to be an interviewer, go on the road and annoy people and interview them and upload your stuff. I think that in order to show, if it's a radio station, if it's, you know, a potential production company, if it's a TV commissioner, whoever it is, they're not just going to randomly DM you because you seem like nice vibes. You have to show that you can do what it is you say you can do, and you're allowed to be bad at it.
Another of our newly inducted fellows of the Academy this year was head of Talk Sport, Liam Fisher. We talked about the shared experience of live sport on the radio and why it works so well.
I think there's several things with it. I think firstly, lots of it is behind the paywall, dealing with like tough times at the moment, but to be able to watch all the sport that's out there or the majority of the major sport that's out there, it's really difficult to do. You know, you've got to have several subscriptions, paying hundreds of pounds per month. People, there's few people who really can sort of do that. So really you've got to pick and choose your subscriptions and what you want to kind of focus on. there is so much sport out there as well. You cannot watch it all, even if you've got those subscriptions.
My husband tries.
We all try. There's lots of us who try. And we're going to give it a damn good go. I think the Football World Cup, 104 games, might challenge even the most hard fan next summer. But we'll see. Inevitably, you cannot be by TV or by screen the whole time. You're going to be in the car traveling somewhere. You're going to be doing the washing up and you can't, like, you know, be watching at the same time or whatever. You're people at the gym, wherever it is, you're doing other things as well. So it's that. And I think the beauty of sport is it's of the moment. It's that shared experience as well. So you want to be watching it. You want to be listening to it. The moment England score that winning kind of penalty for that kind of shared thing, it doesn't work ever quite the same in that kind of highlight kind of capacity as well. And the thing for us has always been, and I think the thing with sport is not just the event itself, it's the bit after it as well. So it's England win a penalty shootout. You want that shared experience of, like, speaking to your mates about it, you know, WhatsApp groups will be going wild. You'll be, you know, speaking to people or down a pub. Can you remember all those penalty shootouts we've missed or whatever it might be? And it's the same for us really with TalkSport. That's why the phone-ins and the sort of reaction from the pundits work kind of so well. And they're some of our most listened to kind of moments, is that bit, almost bit after the event when everybody sort of gravitates for that sort of shared experience as well. And I think that's why sport is so fantastic. And I think why, particularly in the live space with so much other things out there, including kind of some fantastic sort of sports podcast content, that live radio still does really, really well. And live TV will still do really, really well because it's that shared experience at that particular point.
Finally, in this look back at 2025, in November, my guest was Ahmed Hussein, head of BBC Asian Network. He told me that through their Radar figures and the BBC audience research teams, they have identified that 50% of their audience don't consume any other part of the BBC offering. And I asked him why he thought that was.
We are in a very different space than where we probably were 22 years ago. For Asian Network, there are still people who listen to us who've probably been with Asian Network from the beginning, and there are new people that will come to Asian Network. Now, often, whether it be in the car or at home, it's more of a family listen, and so it might just be tuned into that one service. This is why Asian Network does such a job for so many people. This is where sometimes people that are listening want the network to do anything and everything for them. But unfortunately, that's not what we're here for. And I always say this, is that Asian Network does a little bit of something for everyone at different times on the schedule. And so when you break down the schedule and what it does, and if we go back to trending does a very good job of doing those deep dives into those subjects and themes that might not be covered, not just in the BBC, but in the wider media outlet. But then you might go and listen to new music from young British Asian artists that you don't hear on any other Asian radio station, let alone any other mainstream station either. It's because we're unique. We are very unique to what we do and what we deliver.
My thanks go to all the amazing guests from the podcast this year. I'm looking forward to bringing you more great guests in 2026. But remember, if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, then just let me know. Email me at podcast@radioacademy.org. The categories for next year's Arias have been announced. If you need an escape from the telly, the mince pies, and yet another game of Guess Who with your Auntie Joan, then come and check them out on our website, radioacademy.org, and get thinking about your entries because they open on the 7th of January. Next week on New Year's Eve, we look back at the best of the events from 2025 with highlights from the Arias, the Crossed Wires Podcast Festival, our Foot in the Door events, and of course, the Radio Academy Festival. Merry Christmas, and I'll see you next week.